Hey, good morning. Live from our KGGF studios, I'm Sam Speck. Glad you're with us here on this Friday morning. Just like many Fridays, we are joined over the phones by great legislative leaders giving us all the latest on what's going up in Topeka today. It is Republican Representative Doug Blex over the phones this morning. As Representative Blex, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. How about you? I'm in Topeka, and it's really foggy up here this morning.
Oh, super foggy. Yeah, we had a little bit of that this morning. It definitely burned off by the time that the sun came up. But, man, oh, man, lots going on up in Topeka. As always, we appreciate you, as many others, to join us over the phones to let us know everything that's been going on the last couple of weeks up there. So I guess that's probably a good place to start with you, Representative, is this session. It kind of seems like it has come and gone. It is really, really quick right now. But at the same time, I'm sure you've been busy. There's been the thick and the thin. So how has this session been for you, Representative?
Well, it has been slow as far as the number of bills we've had, but we've had some pretty key issues that we've discussed. And yesterday, of course, now this time of year, it kind of gets an irregular schedule. We do a lot of conference committees, which basically puts the Senate and the House three people on each side, and they actually decide on and work out small details, and that there may be differences between the two houses. And so it's kind of an irregular schedule. We'll come in reasonably, 8 or 9 o'clock, and then go into recess and wait till the conference committee and the results of that, and then may come back a couple of times during the day. So it's about kind of the Dr. Pepper theory, 10, 2, and 4 for us older people that understand that. But that's kind of what's going on. Yesterday, we worked on the K-12 school finance, which was House substitute for Senate Bill 16, and Senate come out with a fairly quick passage of that bill. House worked on a version for some time. We have courts wanted it by April the 15th, Attorney General, so we could actually get started on that and start seeing if it's going to satisfy the courts. However, we had some issues. I actually voted against it because a couple of reasons. I like the House version better. Our money was just almost identical as far as the $90 million a year. But what we, the House version, we started with the classroom and built a budget from that, you know, asked what they're going to need in the classroom as far as paras, you know, teachers, supplies, et cetera, and then start from there and go up with our budget. And it come out about the same dollars, but one of the issues that we wanted more accountability. I think too often we're just given a bag of money and go forth and do good things. And that isn't really working, at least if you look at overall graduation rates and college preparedness and ACT scores. They haven't been really improving. So, you know, I think, and two, we encumbered base aid per student was going to increase significantly over the next three or four years, and there's a lot of feeling that we can't encumber a new legislature on you know, what we need to and put them in a box. So that was kind of the differences on it. It actually passed out of the House at 76-46, but it's on its way. However, since it passed yesterday afternoon, I'm hearing rumblings from the Hall Talk that the Schools for Fair Funding is preparing another lawsuit, which we supposedly, the Senate version, which this is almost identical, would guarantee that that wouldn't happen, and because there's no cost of living inflationary index. That just frustrates me to no end. I don't think there's a private person out there or another state employee that's had the guarantee of an inflationary raise increase. I'm sure you guys there at the radio station haven't got a CPI raise. I certainly haven't either. So there's a lot of people have an exception with that.
Certainly. Well, and you make it a, you know, you have an interesting angle with the education as well, how you mentioned just kind of throwing a big bag of money at it, and they go out and update, they get the newest, the greatest technology, all of the greatest updates. But really, when it comes down to, are we learning? Are we actually throwing, you know, that money towards accountability? And what are our kids learning? And in recent times, you had mentioned, you know, with the price tag that we've put onto it, we haven't seen our scores go up. So it's an interesting angle that you put onto it, you know, instead of just throwing a big bag of money at education. What are other ways we can do it?
Well, I think there's a lot of ways, you know, accountability. And what the House version tried to focus on was that same group of students that the Supreme Court was focused on, which is the underperforming 25 to 30% of the students that consistently have problems, and put our dollars there. That may be in the form of mental health, which is a big issue, and I support big time. Maybe in the course of you know, some additional IT and attention to those particular students that struggle. And, you know, it's tough. I tell you what, you look at some of the home life that some of these kids are growing up under, and it is really tough for them to have a good learning environment. You know, I thank the good Lord. My mother had an eighth grade education, but she read to us every night, and education and reading was always an important thing. And, you know, I was blessed with being a good reader, and I think that's a really fantastic kickstart for those kids. And you know, we probably need to start that at an early age. If you got poor parenting skills and poor learning opportunities in a home, it's difficult for them kids to succeed once they get into the public school system.
Certainly, yeah. Again, and there's just so many angles that not necessarily everybody puts into play either. They just always see the dollars and cents at the end of it, and they just kind of put an assumption towards it. So, well, you had mentioned in terms of numbers of bills, you guys haven't been overly busy, but at the same time, I know you have seen some here in recent time. There was a gun bill and an abortion bill as well, and I'd love to get your thoughts on those.
Well, what happened, we lowered the age that a concealed carry permit was 21 down to 18, and part of the thought process on that is, and you got to keep in mind, number one, these are law-abiding kids that, you know, haven't committed any crimes. They got to go through a background check. They got to qualify. They got to meet all the criteria of a concealed carry course and be fingerprinted in the whole nine yards. One of the issues we've run into is other states had 18, and they were not honoring our reciprocity with our permit system, and it was putting that into jeopardy. Right now, if I have a concealed carry in Kansas, I can carry it in Oklahoma. I can carry it in other states that have an agreement with that. So because of the age difference, Kansas felt like it tried to make this thing standard to where, you know, those permits would be good, and each state would honor them. So that was one of the reasons why. And these are law-abiding people. They're not anybody with any criminal backgrounds, and they must have at age 18 to 20, they must have a permit in order to conceal carry. And so that we passed that, had quite a few amendments, magazine restrictions, and a lot of other things that went on, but it passed pretty handily, a good margin in the House.
Nice. Well, yeah, and I think that's always kind of a touchy one, especially when you get around the magazine sizes and then the young ages. And it's funny how people assume, you know, when kids are younger, they just, they're going to get more prone into trouble, when in reality there are law-abiding individuals out there from that age group. And, the ones that can prove it and the ones that have the right paperwork behind it, no reason not to.
Well, we've had the carry on campus that for a couple of years. Everybody predicted the sky was falling, and we haven't had any major issues. And I thank God for that. You know, I hope that we don't. But certainly, when you pass a law, there's no guarantees. Even if you are dealing with supposedly good people, sometimes things can go wrong.
Certainly. Well, it sounds like it went through the House fairly easily as well. I'd love to get your thoughts on this latest bill of speaking on abortion matters as well.
Well, one of the issues is medical medication abortions, which is a pill commonly called RU486, where a patient that wants to to terminate a pregnancy goes in and gets an evaluation, and that can be right in an office or a clinic, and basically a doctor can give her a pill. It's I always mispronounce this. Mifepristone is the first pill, and then that has to be followed by a second pill. And what this bill would do would allow a woman the right of pro-choice to be able to change her mind. And with pregnancy situations, a lot of instability there, particularly if it's not wanted. So we felt like that this would give an opportunity for a lady, if she takes that first pill, she decides, has second thoughts. There's about 24-hour period there that can be reversed. It's not 100%, but it is around 60-70% success rate with no impact on the baby as far as any birth defects or anything. So we felt that was just a simple thing of, you know, hey, you're under stress, you make a decision. That isn't necessarily what I wanted. You realize, you know, 12 hours later that I don't want to do this. I want to keep the baby. So now there's a pill out there that can actually do a reversal, and it's progesterone therapy that's been around for quite a while, particularly the infertility issues. So we had a doctor from Atchison County that was very pro-life and testified on this, that I've been doing stuff like this, that progesterone therapy for years. It's safe, and so a lot of discussion. I found out in my 3 years here, if you've got anything that has to do with abortion or guns, you can just automatically block out about anywhere from a 3 to 4 hour time period on the floor.
No kidding. And I was going to kind of get your word about that as well, because it is a sensitive topic. It is something, and it kind of sounds like with this is a great middle ground. And I was going to kind of get your reaction from the House right now. How is that? Is it a good middle ground, or is it kind of polarizing one way towards the other, this bill in particular?
Well, it was just pretty much party lines. I mean, we have 41 Democrats and 80 some odd Republicans, and basically it was pretty much party lines. It seems like the Republican side of the coalition is real strong and pretty much 100% party lines on gun issues. Not all, but real close. When we get to the abortion issues, we have some Republicans that waver a little bit more. It's not quite as strong. But yeah, it was pretty divided. Had a lot of amendments, and they'll bring up every kind of amendment you can think of. It's just amazing. I don't know how they, I can't think of that many amendments. I think they must stay up at night just thinking of ways to throw in something that they know is not going anywhere, but it's almost like an obstructionist type issue. Starting their point.
Yeah, an intentional obstruction, certainly. So, well, again, it's a sensitive topic, but it sounds like something that you guys have been working on to try and find somewhat of a good middle ground to this, again, a sensitive subject towards that. So, again, speaking with Representative Doug Blex over the phones here is, Doug, thanks so much for joining us here. And before we get ready, I did want to maybe get your thoughts on the one final thing about the Set Bill 22. I think that's what we were mentioning as well.
Okay, the governor vetoed that. That was your and my tax money. That's a deceptive tax increase without you doing it. Basically, Kansas budget planners never planned for that. It was manna from heaven, federal cuts, and basically what our bill would have done would have allowed a decoupling from the federal system, to where if you itemize on the federal, you don't have to itemize on the state. And currently, if you had $17,000 deductible, married, file, and joint, and you would take the standard deduction because it's $24,000 at the federal level, and you couldn't, you'd have to take standard deduction currently under the law in Kansas. That would make you probably pay anywhere from $350 to $500 more to the state of Kansas. And then included in that, we had a 1% sales tax reduction on food, which wasn't a lot, but it amounts to $50 million is what they're projecting. So that is somewhat sizable when you look at, we just give the schools $90 million per year. So that is sizable. It was taught in that it's all corporations, and that was not at all true. It allowed federal level to have corporations bring money back, and then they would be taxed at a later level, and it was just a bad PR. I don't think we have the votes in the Senate to override it. It takes 27 in the Senate side, two-thirds majority. It takes 84 in the House. We will probably look at it and have a potential veto override. Not sure at this point. But it is, bottom line, it is a tax increase to Kansas. It's a deceptive tax increase that's going to take money out of your pockets, and the governor has plans to use that money and spend it somewhere else. And I'm a firm believer we need some strong fiscal accountability. Those are 2021, 2022, we're scheduled to be at balance zero. So when we look at expanding these new programs, which is fine for the year, like now, we've got money to spend. But when you get down the road, that money very well, most likely, will not be there without a tax increase.
Again, speaking with Representative Doug Blex over the phones here this morning. Doug, thanks so much for expanding on a lot of these topics up there, as well as letting us know how your time has been in the last session up there in Topeka. Any final notes that you wanted to get out for our listeners before we lose you?
Out today, we can get this budget bill passed. We have about 3 weeks that we'll have a break, and we will be having a lot of forums. I've got several scattered around my district, and get out to be able to meet with constituents and let them tell us, hey, what are you thinking, and what should we do? Did I do good or do bad? And it's pretty interesting. I enjoy that part of time talking with constituents. I'm looking forward to that.
Well, again, and we will look forward to talking to you just a little bit later on. Again, Representative Doug Blex joining us over the phone. Doug, thank you so much once again. And, again, we'll just check with you next month or so.
All right. Thank you, Sam. Have a good day. God bless.
All right. Thanks so much. Again, Representative Doug Blex joining us over the phone here on the Mighty 690 KGGF.